The First Thing is First Thing with Mike Parsons and Renee Vitale on 760 WJR and on the WJR app, where Michigan comes to talk.
So all reports out of Los Angeles, calmer night last night as a curfew was put into effect for the second straight night in a row. But it does seem like these protests are popping up, and some of them are turning violent in a lot of other cities.
Yeah. In fact, in Washington, actually the state of Washington, there had been a curfew put in place as well. The mayor of Spokane announced a state of emergency and curfew after protesters blocked roads to protest ICE activity. Not just here, but all across the country. I believe that's the only other city where protests happened that they did impose the curfew.
Yeah, I don't believe New York City imposed a curfew last night. They might tonight, because I think last check, and these numbers may have changed, 86 people were arrested last night as those protests reportedly turned violent. And I got to say, I think a lot of people are on edge about this weekend, because
that's where my concern is this weekend. I saw a map that someone had posted of all the different protests that are planned all over the country. And there was a lot of blips on that map.
Yeah. And on top of that, we've got this military parade in Washington, right? D.C. And hopefully everything stays peaceful. I know there's a number here in Detroit, but like I said, in the state of Michigan, but like I said, sort of the juxtaposition of these protests plus this military parade, which, you know, a lot of people are saying sounds very Soviet, mm-hmm, and very
marching soldiers,
right,
tanks rolling down the street. Yes.
Projecting an authoritarian image. It's quite a contrast and quite a dichotomy. And I mean, if you are just dropping in from 2016 and you turn on the news in 2025 and you see these protests where ICE and the National Guard and maybe the Marines are clashing with protesters, and then meanwhile, Washington, D.C., you've got Army tanks going down Pennsylvania Avenue or wherever this parade's happening, you're thinking to yourself, you know, this is kind of dystopian. This is very dystopian. It's not something we're used to seeing in America.
Yeah. And the dollar amount that's been tied to this parade, I don't know the exact figure that they estimate, but just all seems quite unnecessary. The timing of it, the money being put into it, I just don't know that this is what we need right now.
Yeah, and look, the Army deserves to be celebrated for
Absolutely.
250 years. But, I mean, there's other ways. Yeah, I mean, there's a number of conservatives, budget hawks in the Senate. Rand Paul, Senator Kennedy from Louisiana, I forgot his first name, but they've both come out and said, look, I wouldn't be spending the money on this. I'm not the president, but there's better uses and better ways to celebrate our military.
How about a primetime special narrated by Morgan Freeman or something? I don't know. There's just got to be a better way.
How about a nice fireworks show with a symphony orchestra or something?
Drone show. Yes. Any of that.
Yes. You can do a lot with drones these days.
I enjoy a good drone show.
Yeah. Of course, yesterday, the big news in the music world, Brian Wilson, he was a pioneer in many ways.
Yeah.
He was obviously one of the founders of the Beach Boys. He passed away at 82. And, you know, I know on this show, we're all in our 40s, except Jason, who turned 25 for the 21st time earlier this week. So we're kind of this in-between generation where we grew up, we knew who the Beach Boys were, but by the time we were listening to music, they were kind of the oldies.
I remember the Beach Boys most when they were on Full House.
I remember the Kokomo video. Oh my gosh, I love that video.
Yeah. Wait, what's Uncle Jesse doing in the Beach Boys?
Right. What a pleasant, beautiful surprise.
But I mean, Brian Wilson is the epitome of tortured artist that kind of that kind of broke under the pressure of the expectations that he had not brought upon himself. But I mean, a lot of these early Beach Boys songs, it's like, oh, it's about surfing. It's about having fun. It's about being true to your school. But like the arrangements were crazy and what nobody has seen, up until that point.
Yeah. And he was such a creative mind that some think that maybe that drove him to deep personal struggles, like with mental illness. And,
right.
he was put under a conservatorship. He was diagnosed with dementia last year. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, it's like it's almost like those people that are so amazing and so great. It's like they are tortured minds a lot of times. They just,
yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, and my wife is a big fan of the Beach Boys, so we went to their 50th anniversary concert back in 2012 Pine Knob, which I swear I saw Violent J from the Insane Clown Posse there without his makeup.
I saw him there before. Yeah, you know what? I've seen him at some concerts I did not think I would ever, but Beach Boys, that probably takes the cake if that happened.
I mean, here's the thing. People like to clown the Insane Clown Posse, I guess, no pun intended, but I fell into one. People like to make fun of the Insane Clown Posse, but they are musicians, so they probably listen to more than just Juggalo rap,
right.
They probably listen to a lot of different things. But and I knew the Beach Boys hits, but they did a little medley, and this was the first time they had toured with Brian Wilson in years, he had descended into his issues. I know that he had beef with other members of the band. So this was a big deal because it was the 50th anniversary. The entire living original lineup was there. And
that's super cool.
They did a medley of Pet Sounds, which was, if you listen to that album, it was actually written by Brian Wilson. It was supposed to be a solo album, and if you listen closely, you're kind of listening to him descend into addiction and madness. But it was my favorite part of the show because it was just so different. I mean, it was still kind of had that upbeat, but it was kind of dark and introspective. Uh-huh. And then he tried. There was that Smile album that he was working on for decades and decades that finally came out in 2004. So just a very interesting guy. And that
was special for you guys to go to, because I read that by 64, he had stopped touring with the band. So for you to be able to experience that was pretty special.
Well, yeah, I mean, when he was writing Pet Sounds, that's when he stopped touring, because he was so he was engrossed in trying to top the Beatles. They just put out, I think it was Rubber Soul, and Brian Wilson thought it was so brilliant that he's like, I got to top the Beatles. And that probably kind of drove him to the point of madness as well. So, and it was one of these things where people knew that his health was on the decline, and 82 is a ripe old age, but it's still, it was one of those deaths that was shocking but not surprising,
right.
Know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So rest in peace, Brian Wilson. And it did seem like things got repaired in his relationships later on in life.
Yeah, there was reconciliations over the years. And, of course, his daughters took on his musical passion, Carrie and Wendy, and Wilson Phillips.
Someday somebody's gonna... Yeah, it's a banger. Absolute banger.
I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, this song right here is everything. I think this is our generation's Beatles song, or Beach Boys song.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm not sure. I'm not sure if Brian Wilson was involved in this one.
I don't know.
I don't know what the timeline is, but listen to John Stamos playing a mean bongos in this.
So sultry.
Yes. So rest in peace, Brian Wilson. We have to hit a break. It's first thing. Mike, Renee is going to be, she's going to be on a tropical island paradise for the next 3.5 minutes. It's first thing. Mike Parsons, Renee Vitale, WJR. And we are heading into JR morning. Chris Renwick, Lloyd Jackson join us in the studio. Jamie is out today. And, you know, we love kitschy little economic indicators here on this show. And I think we've talked about this one before, Renee, but I feel it's very timely this week.
Sorry, I had to get potted up here. If you want to gauge the direction of the economy, some experts say look no further than the data, like, you know, unemployment rates, inflation rates, and GDP. That's all important, right?
Right.
But there's some unusual metrics that people use to provide insight to the economy.
Always is.
Men's underwear sales. How about that one?
Wow.
So according to experts, the so-called men's underwear index, it suggests that sales of men's underwear tend to decline during periods of financial uncertainty because guys try to make their dollars stretch further.
So they wear their drawers all week? Right. The same pair? What the heck?
You know,
they just reverse them and everything's fine.
Yeah, just Febreze that baby and you're good to go.
Oh, come on.
Now, I don't think they wear them multiple days in a row. I just think they use them long after their usefulness.
You know, holy and all that, holes and tears and rips and stuff.
I'm not buying this because you all are married, right? Everybody here is married. Do you guys actually buy your own? I feel like that's the wives. Lloyd, you do?
No, I don't trust her.
I do as well.
I love her to death, but I don't trust her with my drawers.
She's made those purchases for me, but now she knows what I like. So now she's hip to it.
Here's the thing: I would say men are very picky about their undergarments, just because. Well, I mean,
am I the only one that buys my man's drawers?
No, you're not. No, you're not.
No, but you know what's funny is as I've gotten older, I swear, If my mom got me underwear for Christmas, I'm like, why is this under the tree?
Yeah.
Now I'm like, if my wife gets me underwear, I'm like, yes.
What
absolutely.
A nice, yes. What a nice, sensible gift.
Yes. Oh, happy. It's happy.
It's funny you guys bring this up because I was going to say this week those numbers are skewed because we are heading into Father's Day, which is probably the biggest socks and underwear holiday on the calendar.
Socks, underwear, ties.
Yeah. Well, they say, too, that the baked beans index, that's another thing, because it shows how inexpensive foods like canned beans rise during tough economic times.
Mm. Okay, I can see that.
Also,
that's a very niche segment. The canned baked beans segment.
Yeah.
Right. Usually baked beans are the things that you just kind of ignore at the barbecue, right?
Could you imagine on Wall Street those guys, the NASDAQ floor? What's the bean sales?
What's Bush's going for right now?
Are they up or are they down?
Underwear is selling like hotcakes, boss. Bye, the loom is
up.
You know, though, I am with Chris. There does come a point in every man's life where I remember when I was a kid, you'd always ask your dad, what do you want for Christmas? What do you want for your birthday? What do you want for Father's Day? Just socks and underwear. It's like, that's so boring, Dad. But then somewhere along the lines, and I don't know if it's when you get married or whatnot, socks and underwear are like the best gift that you can get.
Absolutely, man. Because, you know, I got, you know, remember those ties with the hula girl on it that lit up? You know, that kind of stuff.
Right. You don't need any more of those, right?
No, like, I'm done. Yeah. I'm good with that.
Right. For a brief time in the 90s, the Far Side comics on the necktie. All right, JR Moore coming up. The Michigan legislature is addressing potential threats from China, focusing on activities by Chinese nationals and entities within the state.
Michigan House Speaker Matt Haw talks with Chris and Lloyd about this package of bills aimed at mitigating these risks on JR Morning.
So now three Chinese nationals have been arrested for bringing a pathogen into the United States that they say they were going to research at the University of Michigan. These have been described as agro-terror pathogens that could affect crops, it could affect livestock, and ultimately affect the food supply and the U.S. economy. Well, now there's a new package of bills in Lansing aimed at the CCP. It's all part of the Capitol Report here on Wednesday morning on JR Morning, brought to you by the Michigan Chamber of Commerce. And to talk about this package of bills is the Speaker of the House, Matt Hall, who joins us this morning. Mr. Speaker, it's good to have you back.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So talk to me about what these bills are, what they'll accomplish.
Yeah, well, you know, you mentioned the recent student who I mean, I think it was a third person even that was.
Yes,
it is. Yeah,
caught trying to smuggle in something they shouldn't have, you know, for lab research at University of Michigan that could really damage our soil and our agriculture. So, you know, that's one way that we're seeing the Chinese and the Chinese Communist Party and people affiliated, you know, trying to infiltrate our state. And so, but we've seen others too. I mean, there's been kind of this ongoing fight with Goshen over in Big Rapids, where, you know, a company affiliated with the Chinese Communist Party is trying to, you know, buy a land, build a battery plant near a military installation. Do you remember, I believe it was last year, we had five Chinese nationals that were caught near Fort Grayling trying to observe military, you know, state, the National Guard military drills up there. So there's been a lot of things going on. And so we've tried to put together a package of bills that will address all of the things.
Well, I know your bill passed the state house, but it appears stalled in the Senate. And given this recent event, have you received any new signals of support or reconsideration from across the aisle?
Not yet, but I'm hopeful it'll offer this opportunity to look at this bill package again and try to bring it forward again. And you know, some of the key things we're trying to accomplish here. Number one, bringing more accountability to some of these cultural exchange agreements that allow, you know, so these Chinese nationals, some affiliated with the Chinese Communist Party, to come over. So we're trying to bring more accountability and transparency to those agreements. You know, we still want international students, but we need our universities to do more in vetting people that have ties to some of these hostile countries as deemed by our, you know, State Department.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to stop foreign governments that are hostile to the United States from buying farmland and people affiliated with their political parties. We're trying, you know, that's one of our bills, stopping, you know, foreign nationals and foreign governments from buying land near military installations. You know, it's very concerning. And we have a few others too. So we're really trying to, oh, and the last one I wanted to mention is, you know, they shouldn't be getting large taxpayer subsidies. You know, if you're a TCP affiliated company, or you're, you know, one of these other countries, there's a few others like Venezuela, you know, that are very hostile to the United States. Why are we giving them tax dollars to come to Michigan? And so that all moved. It was bipartisan. Most of these bills got 20, 30 Democrat votes in the House. So there are, you know, many Democrats who agree with us, but we're struggling over there with the Democrat state Senate. But we're struggling with them on a lot of issues. They don't move very many bills over there, unfortunately.
Is Michigan particularly vulnerable to bad actors from China?
Well, I think so, because we have a governor and Michigan Economic Development Corporation that's willing to give large taxpayer subsidies to companies affiliated with the Chinese Communist Party. I think you saw, you know, Bill Ford spoke recently at the Mackinac Conference up north and said, you know, the Detroit Chamber Conference, and pointed out that in this big, beautiful bill, you know, Congressman Molinar had been working on something that got in there, which is to take away some of these big tax credits for electric battery plants for these Chinese Communist Party affiliated companies. So you're seeing some of that happening at the federal level. That has to happen because states like Michigan have given big subsidies to companies like Goshen and this cattle project where Ford is partnering with a Chinese company.
Speaker Hall, what would your message be right now to Michigan residents that may be concerned about what's happening now, but, you know, unsure how real or immediate that these threats are?
Well, I definitely think it's a problem. I mean, you know, you remember, you know, I remember getting a call from Governor Whitmer probably 2 years ago when we had those, you know, remember that, those weather balloons that were flying around, you know, and we had to, you know, our National Guard was paying attention to that. Like I mentioned, I mean, they're up there observing our military, you know, moves up at Fort Grayling. You know, you're seeing them coming to our universities, and it's not just what we've caught them with, which is very concerning.
Yes.
But, you know, I mean, there's a lot of fear that there's a lot of ways that they're infiltrating our universities and our curriculum and radicalizing people. So, you know, there's a lot of threats here, and we have to take it very seriously. We have to identify who our adversaries are, and we have to, you know, we have to be balanced, but we do have to put our state national interests first.
Have you talked to the universities in the state about some of these vulnerabilities potentially?
Yeah, you know, we have, and as we're looking at putting together, you know, our plan for, you know, funding universities, and we're looking at some other things, you know, this is our forefront on our mind is, we really need, I mean, first of all, we need to emphasize more Michigan high school students. You know, if the University of Michigan was focusing on bringing Michigan high school students to the University of Michigan,
sure,
this would be less of a problem. But instead, they're not doing that. So I think there's some things we can do to get these universities to refocus and maybe have fewer of these problems.
Speaker of the House, Matt Hall, really appreciate your time. Keep us up to date on this legislation and where it goes.
All right. Thank you.
Yep, you got it.
And we'll be talking more about Brian Wilson in just a second. But, Renee, I missed this yesterday. Yesterday morning at 3 a.m., Elon Musk posted on X, "I regret some of my posts about President at Real Donald Trump last week. They went too far."
Yeah, this is, of course, going back to that social media feud with Musk calling Trump's spending bill a disgusting abomination, hinting at Trump's ties to Jeffrey Epstein, and then agreeing with suggestions that Trump should be impeached. So I know if he was having a moment at 3 a.m.
Right. Was he up late listening to Lady Antebellum and regretting his decisions?
Right. It's 3 a.m. I must be lonely. Maybe it was Matchbox 20. I don't know. Pick any of your heartbreak songs.
It could have been an entire playlist. Who knows? But I think what happened was Musk was on one. I don't know if he was throwing a temper tantrum or having a meltdown. And I think probably the Epstein tweet is the one that was kind of what was nuclear for their relationship. Because if you either out somebody or falsely accuse somebody of being involved with what Jeffrey Epstein is accused of being involved in, I think there's no coming back from that.
Yeah, he didn't specify which posts he regretted, but just that some of his comments about Trump crossed the line.
Right. And now he probably wants back in. And Donald Trump's like, nope.
He did, although Trump did say that he wouldn't mind if Musk reached out to him. So maybe they can meet at, I don't know, a coffee shop and discuss things. And
the Washington, D.C. big boy, if there is one.
There you go.
Yeah. So you heard coming into the segment, Jason playing some Beach Boys, and unfortunately, we lost Brian Wilson yesterday.
Yeah, at the age of 82, you know, he's known for the sun-soaked sound of California with hits like Good Vibrations, God Only Knows. Really shaped an era and inspired generations of musicians. His family announced his passing on social media, saying that we're at a loss for words and are asking for privacy as they grieve. His life, complex, you know, marked by both super creative achievements, and then there's deep personal struggles that he dealt with, including a long battle with mental illness. They haven't said the official cause of death, but it is known that he was diagnosed with dementia in early of 2024.
Israel appears to be preparing to launch an attack soon on Iran, according to officials in the United States and Europe. A state step that could further inflame the Middle East and derail or delay efforts by the Trump administration to broker a deal to cut off Iran's path to building a nuclear bomb. This from the New York Times. The concern about a potential Israeli strike and the prospect of retaliation by Iran led to the United States on Wednesday to withdraw diplomats from Iraq and authorize the voluntary departure of U.S. military family members from the Middle East. It's unclear how extensive an attack Israel might be preparing, but the rising tensions come after months in which Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of Israel has pressed President Trump to seize on what Israel sees as a moment of Iranian vulnerability to strike. Easy for me to say. President Trump waved off another plan by Israel several months ago to attack Iran, insisting that he wanted a chance to negotiate a deal with Tehran that would choke off Iran's ability to produce more nuclear fuel for a bomb. 2 weeks ago, President Trump said that he warned President Netanyahu about launching a strike while U.S. negotiations with Iran were underway. And yesterday, President Trump said that him and President Xi Jinping of China have agreed to framework of a trade deal.
Yeah, he declared that a trade deal is done after two intense days of negotiations in London, delivered this framework agreement. Now, according to his post on Truth Social, the deal keeps China's current 10% tariffs on U.S. goods and maintains America's 55% tariffs on imports from China, pending formal sign-off from both Trump and President Xi. Highlights include stepped up cooperation on rare earths, critical minerals for everything from aerospace to electric vehicles, with China agreeing to supply magnets and necessary minerals up front, while the U.S. would ensure that its universities will remain open to Chinese students. U.S. Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick, he described the London talks as putting meat on the bones of last month's Geneva pause on retaliation. Critics, though, warn that it could hold more promise than pressure. But for now, this framework signals hopefully a diplomatic reset between Washington and Beijing.
Well, last night was a bit of a quieter night in L.A., but the unrest continues not only in L.A., but in other cities around the country between protesters, ICE, and the National Guard. Former police chief James Craig, he spent 30 years with the LAPD, and he was chief here in Detroit during the turbulent summer of 2020. He lends his perspective to Marie Osborne in for Kevin Dietz on All Talk.
James Craig, former Detroit police chief, was at the helm of the Detroit Police Department when protests became a bit violent here in this country following the death of George Floyd. Here in Detroit, there were issues, lots of arrests, but overall, the chief managed to keep things fairly quiet here in Detroit. James Craig, we welcome you to WJR.
Thank you, Maria. Glad to be here to discuss this troubling situation.
Out in LA
right now.
We want to play for you something. We want to start this by playing for you a clip of audio from an interview that you had with Fox News on May 31st of 2020. Right, this was right in the thick of George Floyd protests, which were underway here in Detroit and around the country. You were asked, what was your message to the protesters? And here is what you said.
Message is simple. We support those who are lawfully protesting. We understand the pain. We understand and embrace the First Amendment. But I will tell you, if you're going to be a lawbreaker, we're going to be relentless in our pursuit to arrest you.
So not only did you have experience with what's happening in Los Angeles right now, you were also once a member of that police force. So as you are watching what's happening in Los Angeles, what in your view has gone wrong there?
Well, you know, it pains me deeply, as you indicate. I served almost three decades in Los Angeles, certainly was on the front lines during the uprising in L.A., during the Rodney King incident. So I know all too well what works and what doesn't work. What didn't work then and certainly not working today in L.A. is that in L.A. then, during Rodney King, there was a delay in responding to quell the violence. It just didn't happen. It was very little leadership, weak leadership, in fact. And so fast forward to what's going on today, once again, weak and hesitant leadership on the part of the mayor. And also, I'll throw the governor in that bucket as well. If you set the tone early on,
and what the expectations of. I mean, certainly supporting peaceful protests is the only way. But when you have a group of agitators who come in to try to stoke violence, and you stand back and do nothing, look, the first responsibility of anyone sitting in this seat, whether it's a president, a governor, a mayor, is to protect the citizens they serve, period. No exception to that. And so to frame what's going on in L.A. under, well, these are peaceful protesters. I'm so sick and tired when I hear people constantly talk about protests that are peaceful when the images are clear, vehicles are burning, fires are set, police officers are being attacked. I don't know, but that's not peaceful. And there has to be a response to that. And so to do nothing is really a failure of your responsibility, and I don't even want to call it a leadership role, but as a mayor.
You talked about following the what happened here, the rallies that were held here in Detroit in connection to George Floyd. You talked about 60 to 70% of the people who were arrested were from outside the city of Detroit, and many of those people had been aggressive with police. What can a city do about that?
What a city can do is what we did. We didn't stand idly by and do nothing. We, in a very strategic way, placed our focus on the individuals that were creating the problem, and we did that. Fortunately, here in Detroit, the police department has a great relationship with our community, and that includes the activist community, that includes clergy, who stood with us in support of us to keep our city safe. What you cannot do is do what we saw very clearly in Seattle during that 2020, as they call it, summer of love, and the mayor and the police chief just stand there and do absolutely nothing. And what ultimately happened, predictably, was the fact that these agitators took over the police station, basically evicting the police officers, and then took over a section of the city and said, law enforcement cannot come inside of here, no matter what the circumstances are. That's what failure looks like. And then when you look at some of the other cities who failed to take decisive action, maybe not as egregious as that, but certainly it didn't work out so well for them either. So that wasn't an option for us. We knew, and you know what's appalling, Maria, that when I hear, when critics ask me, say, well, you know, during 2020, the aftermath, Detroit Will Breathe sued the city and prevailed in their lawsuit. How do you feel about that? I said, well, one, I disagree with the settlement. We did it right. And so what message are we sending to groups like that? And what I never hear discussed, and many Detroiters, Metro Detroiters remember this vividly, that while we were out doing a criminal investigation and an individual, a suspect, came up, fired several shots in close proximity to an officer, and we responded using deadly force. However, it was Detroit Will Breathe that began to start a narrated real-time video in social media that just basically articulated that we shot an unarmed black man, unprovoked, who was just seated on his front porch. Of course, that prompted 300-plus angry protesters to converge on the crime scene and then later march to one of our police stations. Had it not been for releasing in a timely way body-worn camera video that refuted that assertion that there was no problem from that. But what I find troubling is the media never wants to talk about that. They want to talk about this lawsuit, but they don't want to talk about this egregious act of trying to promote violence. And by the grace of God, there was no violence in response because, again, in a timely way, we got a video that refuted
their assertion that we shot and killed an unarmed black man unprovoked.